Hello, welcome to a little conversation with myself, Jeff Ma, and an incredible teacher we're pleased to bring up to the Yoga Lounge, the mighty Amy Ippoliti. And just to give you a little bit of a heads up background here, I remember a few years ago, probably seven, 8 years ago, I was in Boulder, Colorado, doing a training with Richard Freeman. And during that time, I had time to, during that month, I could wander around. And I remember going to various studio spaces, and there's this one studio slash shop, and they would have these cards out front for various events that were happening in the community. I remember picking up this one card, and I was completely captivated because there was this black and white image of this incredibly graceful, powerful woman doing a one-armed back bend, and not just making it look easy, but also making it look powerful and stylish. And it was etched in my mind, who is this? And I flipped the card over, and it was Amy Ippoliti. And so fast forward a couple years down the road, I had the good fortune to cross paths with Amy at Wanderlust in Whistler. And then just last year in 2014, she graced us with her presence at the Yoga Lounge in Canmore for an incredible series of workshops, which she is again coming up this upcoming September. So here we go. Without further ado, let's find out a little bit more about the incredible teacher we have coming up, Amy Ippoliti. Amy, how are you doing?
I'm doing great. I didn't know that you had that postcard experience.
Oh yeah, it was a crazy thing.
So cool.
That was like back in the day when I was earlier in my yoga career.
And super vintage.
I remember at the time Andy Sauer was starting to gain a little bit of a foothold, and you were in that at Ground Zero, and I remember seeing that card, and I was like, wow, it was a killer.
Oh,
thing.
So cool.
It was amazing. It was super, super amazing. And so yeah, how have you been? What's been going on in your world?
Oh well, it's been a great summer. I just finished a phenomenal teacher training, 200-hour, month-long in Boulder, Colorado, and it was so, so inspiring, and I feel so enriched from it, which is great to feel enriched after teaching for an entire month, so I'm pretty psyched.
And so maybe just for some of the folks that aren't as familiar, you're an incredible teacher. You travel around doing workshops and stuff, but tell us maybe a little bit more of some of the other projects, such as the 99 Monkeys stuff, causes that you're supporting, because I think a lot of that stuff I find really fascinating, and I think some folks would love to hear more too.
Yeah. Well, I've been doing yoga since I was 16, but I've always had other interests that were related to yoga, but were very, very different, and it's been fun in the last 5 years or so to start allowing my yoga to not take a back seat, but to move aside a little bit to be able to do some conservation and earth-related projects. So one of my great passions is the rainforests and the oceans, and so I've been doing some photography projects underwater, doing yoga with marine life. So that's been really exciting, and then just to be able to practice yoga with a whale shark or a manta ray and then create imagery that creates a little bit of awe so that it gets shared and awareness is raised to protect those creatures. So that's one thing I've been up to. And it inspires the work I do, of course, in the yoga room. So that's been a real joy to integrate that work into my life, but also into the classroom with my teaching.
And so what were the names of the organizations again?
The organizations for
some of the conversations, the conservation stuff that you're supporting, because it would be great if there was like an URL or a website that we could, like, people who are listening.
Oh, sure. Yeah. Well, Wild Aid is a big one.
Okay.
They're doing great work right now to help preserve wildlife all over the world. Incredible work. So they're fantastic. But Wild Aid, yeah, that's the main one. And then we work with several others like OPS, Oceanic Preservation Society. And yeah, that's about it.
Okay. And I've seen some of the photos. I remember last year when you're in Canmore, Tara was sending in photos of various stuff of shoots that he was done. Whale shark, you, yoga, set it up. Like I'm trying to so that the people listening can kind of figure this out, because I reckon a whale shark's pretty big, and you're like a tiny little powerhouse. So I'm just trying to figure this out, how it works out in the water world here.
Well, it's fun. I mean, they don't really care about me. Like I could just be okay. Like a floating piece of driftwood for all they care. They're super interested in eating basically fish eggs.
Okay.
That are floating around in the water from snappers. And so they're just filtering for these eggs. And okay. They're like, oh, there's a piece of driftwood. But they're super conscious, too. I mean, it's not like they bump into me or anything like that. They totally steer away. If they see me in the way of their path, they'll move out of the way. Even though they're huge, they veer. as it were. So they're very, very docile and sweet and just so fun to be around. I mean, that magnificent size, and they move through the water so much faster than they seem to be,
right?
Because they're so big.
I
go in and I dive underneath them. I do yoga underneath them. I do yoga right in front of them, and then they veer away.
Yeah.
So it's all good. And it's a really sweet interaction for sure.
Okay. And are there moments of connection, or is it more like an observation sort of like relationship you feel between yourselves and the whale sharks? I find that part super fascinating too.
Mm-hmm. There's definitely some connection. I mean, as I said, they're on a mission to be feeding, but
right.
There's definitely a connection because they see you and they make sure that they don't bump into you. And I, of course, make sure I don't bump into them. And there was one point that I was on a paddleboard and one of the whale sharks intentionally went underneath me and pressed against the underside of the board.
Oh, really?
And I think it was trying to get parasites off. Like
okay.
It was rubbing on the board, and
yeah.
That was pretty wild. Like, I didn't expect that.
Yeah.
So that was one for sure interaction that happened.
Because yeah. how big is a whale shark? 50 feet long? Like
40, something like 40 feet. Yeah, the biggest ones.
Okay, yeah. So like multiple car lengths sort of thing, and this is...
Uh-huh. Yep.
Right on.
Definitely.
Yeah. And so you mentioned you've been like practicing since you're about 16 years old, and you've probably been teaching since, gosh, like what's the arc of your teaching career been like?
I started at 27
okay.
years old. Yeah. So it's been almost 20 years of teaching.
Wow. So you've obviously
seen
like a ton of things like come and go and stuff. And
for sure.
Sure. And let's say like your 99 Monkeys project, that is geared towards training teachers, is it? Or is it geared towards like professional development, which is like I'm done
just
looking at that.
A little bit of both. It's 90 Monkeys, and we
okay.
we have a studio in Boulder, Colorado, but we're more of an online presence. So we create online courses for yoga teachers in various subjects like anatomy and philosophy and professional development, career, personal growth, these kinds of categories, prenatal. And so it's really a way to round out your teacher training education online. So when you graduate from a teacher training and you feel you're still maybe a little deficient or not as proficient at something, you can take a course in any of those categories to augment yourself. And then, of course, we run trainings in the studio itself that are in person.
Okay. And are you the primary faculty, or are there other people that are helping you on the project? Or?
Yeah, I'm primary faculty, and then we have of course, a huge faculty online.
Okay.
And then for the trainings, though, I do most of my trainings out of the studio, but then we have a lot of exquisite adjunct faculty that come in for the trainings. Yeah.
Right on.
Totally.
So with the... Because you teach a copious amount, and I'm sure a lot of people that are listening to this talk are quite dedicated practitioners, and probably quite a few of them are teachers as well. Do you have any, say, advice for someone that is like a budding yoga teacher beginning like the early arc of their career? Because I feel like even when I first started teaching, say, 10, 12 years ago, it was a completely different teaching landscape than it is, say, today, just in terms of people teaching, numbers of people teaching, styles, et cetera. Like, do you have any, like, words of insight there?
Yeah, I would say there's a few things. Number one is that just be ready for teaching yoga to take you out of your practice of yoga.
That sounds really fascinating. Okay.
Yeah, the more you teach, the less time you seem to have to get on your own mat, and yet getting on your own mat is the spice of a great teacher. Someone that is enthusiastic about the practice is someone who has the practice under their belt. You know, it's close to them. So it's always going to keep you inspired if you are able to keep your practice up. Mm-hmm. And so that might mean that you have to schedule time for your practice as though it's a paying class. Every day at this time, no matter what offer I'm given, I'm supposed to be practicing at this time. It's like an appointment with yourself. So that would be my first little word of advice. And then the other thing is if you're struggling with how to get a teaching position or getting better teaching positions, the best thing you can do is get out there and, go to the studios that you want to teach at.
Absolutely.
And take their classes and be of service while you're there, like help put away blankets and just talk to people and be part of the community. And that visibility will get you, sooner or later you will get hired at that place.
Right.
So go to the events. And that's great too, because you can get your practice in.
So
you kind of get two things done at once with that one. And then the third is just to constantly be a student. I mean, just be curious about learning and attend workshops, augment your training, continual learning, be a student forever.
And like those are all huge pieces of advice, because like honestly, if one does not have their own practice, how could they possibly have any insight to share? And then you're just mm-hmm. repeating what you hear from someone else. And you might be repeating pretty good stuff, but at the same time.
But it doesn't have the essence, the juice.
It does not have the essence, the juice, absolutely. And so when you started your teaching career, was it the sort of thing you did on the side? Or did you make a big leap and just like, you know what, I'm not doing that anymore, I'm doing this, and it was like all in? I'm curious about that.
Oh, that's a good question. I have to recall how that all went down. I think I think that I dove in.
Okay.
And the reason being, I had a very supportive partner at the time who helped me pay for my yoga books so that I could get certified.
Sure. Yeah.
And then it was strange. I think I worked part-time doing it for a while because yoga wasn't very popular when I started. And so there wasn't much need for me out there because not a lot of people did yoga.
Mm-hmm.
But within 6 months of sort of working part-time, I think I was still teaching self-defense, actually, here and there. So I was doing, I was teaching self-defense and empowerment classes for women and teens and men and stuff for a little while, and so I was probably juggling those two things for a little while. I know, we have to talk. But I just worked part-time and trusted that I would be able to do it as a career.
Okay,
and
so you did have that eye of this something you could do. Okay. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but I feel like the climate's really changed and that isn't something that I would advise now.
For sure.
So what happened for me is that I started that journey, and then within 6 months, yoga exploded. And people found out that Willem Dafoe and Sting and Madonna did yoga with our Jivamukti folks in New York City where I was living at the time.
Right.
And it went national. And so I went from having the sub for my living, for people who already had teaching slots, so like being booked solid, like I had to say no to things within 6 months of starting to teach yoga.
And you were probably pretty good as well. You probably have, because there is like, there's that little X factor that Amy Apolipi has that people are drawn to.
Oh, that's sweet.
But 6 months is a big arc. Like I would probably echo some of that sentiment in my own arc too. Like in Calgary at the time, when I first did my teacher training, it was kind of like the wave was starting to crest a little bit. And honestly, mm-hmm. I just feel super fortunate. I think I was one of those crazy situations where you're in the right place at the right time. And
that's,
I think, because
exactly what I feel. Yeah.
Yeah. And I was a guy teacher when there was a lot of women mm-hmm. teaching. And I think like studios were like hoping to like maybe perhaps round out their like teaching rosters, and that was okay. And then the same thing, you know, like started to get busy. But yeah, I do feel that right now in this current day and age, like to make like the full leap from like one job and transition and then say, I'm going to make it as a yoga teacher and only teach yoga, like, I would have trepidation to tell someone to do that as well.
Yeah, it's changed out there.
It's
and I feel fortunate too, but you know, that might be a good thing in a lot of ways.
Yeah.
You know, to kind of don't quit your day job.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. And so you do a lot of travel. You do a lot of big events and you're teaching at conferences, those sort of things. And this is probably more of a question that I think more established teachers would probably be curious about. Say, prior, big event, you're walking into a room, you know, a couple hundred people, or you're, you know, prepping for a series of videos to film on Yoga Glow, or maybe there's, you know, you're bringing in guest teacher and you have to be awesome. Are there any little rituals or things you do to prepare for these events, or do you just go in cold? Like, I think people would like to know.
Mm-hmm. You know, I think more in the beginning when I first started doing big events, I had full-on puja. Like, I set up a little altar in my hotel room or wherever with a candle going and music and get myself super pumped up and then go over my class plans, you know, ad nauseum and really be prepared.
Right.
So my ritual was, like, being prepared so that I felt like I had a structure to fall back on.
Yeah.
And then I had like I said, a little altar that just would call in spirit so that you know, I had my structure, but I was also asking for divine grace, if you will, to just channel through me.
Right.
Now I sort of feel like from doing those rituals so many times, I'm just kind of old hat, like I can just go in and it's there for me.
Boom.
When I need it to be. So I feel like in the beginning I needed to create more ritual, and now it's sort of like it's so part of the fabric of my being and what I do
mm-hmm.
that it's just there. So
the connection's established. You're in.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. I'm in, exactly.
Which is so great. So tell us about your practice these days. I know personally my practice has changed so much from when I first started to, like, you know, even just like kind of navigating the challenges of having two kids. Tell us, you know, like, I know practice changes all the time, but what does practice look like for you in your world?
Yeah, you know, as I've aged, you know, the body definitely gets a little stiffer, and one of my priorities as I age is to keep my vitals really healthy, and that involves cardiovascular exercise
mm-hmm.
much more than when I was in my 30s or 20s. And so I'm on my bike all the time, and I'm swimming, and in the winter I'm skate skiing,
mm-hmm.
and it definitely tightens my body up, and I definitely have more aches and pains because of it. I feel like my skin is glowing, and my vitals are really healthy because of it. And I feel like as we age, that's so essential that our vitals are,
right.
You know, it's more important than flexibility.
Right.
That said, you know, my yoga has changed a lot. It's tightened up a lot because of it. And so what I find myself doing is much more of a therapeutic practice now that is helping my body get back to that flexibility.
Mm-hmm.
And in an ideal world, my goal is to have enough time in my day that I can do both.
Yes,
so that
for
I can
sure.
do more of a full yoga practice that balances the athleticism that I've got going on. But in the meantime, the practice is very, very specific to being able to move in a healthy way.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm doing a lot of things that put my spine back into alignment, things that make the shoulders feel good, a slow, gradual shoulder warm-up, slow, gradual hip warm-up, so that I just feel awesome when I'm done on the mat. And I feel like I've undone some of the damage from the cardiovascular
stuff.
I'm happy with that. I'm really happy with that. And I know I'm in this tricky transitional place where I'm sort of balancing, like, okay, you are an athletic fool right now, and it's kind of like damaged your yoga practice. How do I come back to that place in the middle?
Right.
Where I can do both. And it's been really exciting sharing that with my students, particularly because I teach in Boulder where everyone is on their bike and everyone is swimming and everyone is, you know, out there doing stuff. And I know you can relate living in Canmore. And I know when I was there last September, it was just like everyone was so sore from their workouts.
Everyone just beating down, right? What do you do?
I feel like Canmore is just the perfect place for me to teach. because
people
everyone relates.
It's exciting.
I'm really pumped though, because I feel like since I was last in Canmore and now I've come up with so many new tricks and new ways to bring that functionality back into the body after strong athleticism.
We so good. We're so excited.
I'm really, really psyched to share it, actually.
I'm so curious. This is going to be so great. It's such a fascinating thing because I do know there are people out there that do yoga. And by do yoga, I'm saying like asana practice. And that's all they do. And, you know, that's totally fine. And they are, I remember like David Swenson having this little thing. He's like, yeah, like, I don't know, like in my life, I don't want to just be an asana machine and just dedicate all my physical pursuits to getting to the next pose or, you know, I want to live a life. And I do know in the beginning, I was so enamored with the practice. But yeah, I was just banging out asana like crazy. And then there came a point, it's like, what am I like, working with this amazing, crazy system and cultivating my body more, right?
And even that can be super extreme, you know, like if you're just going for poses, you can completely tweak yourself. What's more interesting to me is not so much posing, but moving.
Yes.
That's become really, really interesting to me. Yeah. And it's tough, you know, in a culture right now that's really obsessed with imagery.
Yeah.
And, you know, Instagram and, you know, check out that pose. Look at this variation. Oh, my God. No way. Check out that form.
Right.
And that's, you know, and it's beautiful. And I love the evolution that's happening pictorially. And at the same time, how do you, you can't really depict what functional movement looks like on Instagram, you know.
It's not as sexy, man.
But man,
for sure.
You know, to be able to be 80 years old and able to make yourself a cup of tea because you've been moving functionally for the last 50 years.
Yeah.
That's interesting to me because you want to get to your old age and be functional and not be in pain and not have to rely on others to help you do things. You know? So anyway, you got to start young with that stuff.
Yeah, it's true. And I really feel that yoga right now is on this sort of, there's like a cusp for like it's beginning to be a bit of a sea change in how the practice is being addressed. Like I feel there's a confluence of outside factors from like various other physical modalities. And I think there's beginning to be convergence on just like this is how you move well. And because yoga is so prevalent, it's becoming a very powerful form for hopefully those ideas of this is how you move well to show up in people's lives. I really feel like the next level of teaching, if people are willing to go there as teachers, is to actually, take on that mantle of, hey, like functional movement, you know, intelligent biomechanics, like taking a look at the context of what yoga asana is and how do we overlay these more new intelligent ideas behind them and over them so that what we're doing is, you know, honoring tradition, but at the same time, it's relevant for ourselves in this world. Like, I don't know about you, Amy, but I'm planning to live past 100. So, and I could totally see past
I can see that happening.
Yeah, you're going 100. Yeah. Okay. Well, here's an interesting question, and because you're like the first person I've ever interviewed, but this is a question I plan on asking other people down the road. What is the biggest trend in yoga that you would like to see stop now?
Oh, my God. Oh, man. Maybe that's it, what we just talked about.
What do you mean?
Like the trend of, you know, obsessing with the form of the pose
mm-hmm.
versus the form in the body.
Right.
I'd like to see that trend stop right now.
Okay. Right. It's fascinating because I sometimes, I don't quite see it as much in Canada, but you know, because like you're teaching down in the States and it's like a different culture.
Yeah.
And there also is that cult of celebrity, which is a big thing. It seems like how you can, you could have, you know, pictures of yourself doing poses and everybody wants to see them. But I sort of question, like, what is that driving forward? You know, like, do we need to celebrate it that much anymore? I don't know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So that's not trending as much in Canada though.
It's starting to, like, for sure.
Mm-hmm.
It's starting to, like, and I think some people are kind of, like, into that. It's not something I personally understand, but, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's
Well, the thing with it is, like, there's positives and negatives to it, and one of the positives is that it's evolving yoga as we know it. Like, it's evolving the kinds of poses that are out there.
Mm-hmm.
So that you can start making different shapes with the body, and that's super cool.
Sure.
And then the downside is kind of what we were saying, is that there's this obsession with, you know, achieving a pose as opposed to being able to meditate, for example, or, mm-hmm. or like we said, move in a functional way that's going to have longevity and sustainability for your body.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the downside of it. And I think I would say the third downside to some of these social media accounts that get really, really big is that the person could be really good at social media and have phenomenal imagery, but then mm-hmm. not necessarily teach very well. So then they get, like, they might get hired because of their notoriety on social media, but then they actually aren't trained very well or don't know how to teach or only have been teaching for, you know, 6 months or something. What
then,
you hope
know,
is that
yeah.
they're both, you know, you hope that they're an amazing teacher and that they're getting hired because they're an amazing teacher, not because they have amazing photographs.
And they have, like, a mega following on Instagram.
Right. You're hoping
yeah.
that it's, you know, that it, and there's certainly cases of that out there, but I think it's important to go to a teacher who's been really well-trained and has had some experience and, you know, has some wisdom behind the practice,
right.
you know, no matter who they are.
For sure.
Yeah, it's important. Yeah.
Right on. And so... Like I think the idea is called platform is the concept. I think it comes from the publishing industry where, like, if you were to say, like, bring a book to a publisher, like, they would look at your book and they would look at your chapter, your sample chapter, and this is pretty good. And then they would ask you flat out the next, well, what's your platform? And you'd be like, well, what's my platform? Well, could you tell us mm-hmm. how many people hit your website? How many likes do you have on Facebook? Do you have a subscription service? How many people follow your, and that whole platform side of things, it's definitely more of a commercial avenue. And obviously a platform is important, but I feel platform created from the right reasons in the right way and people mm. building a platform in a more meaningful way because of what they teach as opposed to, you know, they're good looking.
Right.
But I also feel that stuff, I think that time is starting to come too. Like,
mm-hmm.
like beginning to wonder that.
Well, yeah. I mean, I think if you have a message, if you have a message to put out into the world that's going to heal and bring harmony and beauty to the world,
mm-hmm.
make a big platform, you know,
sure.
to get that message out, you know.
Yeah, big time.
Yeah.
And I think if it's like the right thing, the platform explodes too. And what are you also like saying either within or outside of yoga practice? What are you most jazzed about in your life right now?
Outside of yoga?
Yeah, sure. Or inside. It's totally with, yeah,
oh,
totally
inside.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, the thing I'm most jazzed about for myself right now and my partner Taro is that we are restoring an old home completely ecologically. And I'm really jazzed about that because it's been a dream for both of us to live in a home that is completely, you know, net zero and sustainable and clean and, you know, chemical free and all that stuff. And really to start from home, to start kind of living or walking the talk, you could say, by starting with the talk right at home. So we're really living our philosophy right where we sleep, you know. And I'm just, it's very exciting to go through the design process and choosing all that stuff, but it's also what I'm most excited about is being in a physical environment that we've crafted that is sustainable for the planet, not only as a role model or an example for others, but just to see what that does to our psyche and what it does for our lives and how it, you know, what it attracts into our lives because we're starting from home. And, you know, it's a huge dream for us to make a difference before we die, you know, to help this planet. And I feel like surrounding ourselves with a home that is planet safe is the way to start. So I'm really psyched about that and what it's going to bring. So,
and it is, is that project being documented in any way? So like listeners can check out, like, you know, is there a link that people can say, see what
Yeah, I think it's going to be, it won't be like day by day, like blow for blow, but it'll be like after it's all done, we'll have all the documentation. But
So like when that comes, give me the link and then I can forward it to like all the Yoga Lounge people.
Yeah, totally.
Because, you know, that there's rumblings of that out here in the Bow Valley, right? Like people are trying to put solar in their homes. People are trying to get off grid, you know, like, you know, curiosity about rainwater collection, all those things.
Yeah, it's going to have a lot of those components.
Rewinding just a little bit and just what's your personal experience or opinion or relationship with meditation right now?
Meditation for me is the thing that enabled me to be alone without feeling like I had to occupy myself with, you know, with television or a book or whatever. So if you put me in, you know, a situation where I had to be alone and I had nothing to occupy myself with, I would be like, yay. Whereas before I would be like in sheer terror of not having something to do. And I think that's, I don't know, there's something about that makes me just feel confident that I'm okay being with myself. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So I think the biggest thing for me with meditation was that, and it took about 7 days of silence and meditating for me to come to that conclusion.
When like did that happen?
Casual meditating didn't do it for me. It had to be like this huge retreat. That was sometime in the late 90s, early 2000s. I went up to Barre, Massachusetts with Sharon Salzberg. And I just was there for 7 days straight, got completely silent.
Was this a Vipassana meditation, or was it a different form that you guys?
I was actually doing loving kindness meditation at the time with a little bit of Vipassana thrown in.
Yeah.
And it was at the Insight Meditation Society in Barre, Massachusetts.
Okay. And at the 7 day moment, an epiphany arose.
Yeah, it was really something. I walked away from that never fearing being alone or, you know, being bored or any of that stuff, or like unoccupied, like what do you do with yourself, you know? And now, of course, we have these smartphones, like, and, you know, if you're alone, you'll go whip out the smartphone. I mean, if I didn't have any of that, I know I would be okay. That's the good news.
Okay.
So... yeah, and so now it feels like I can tap into meditation as a way to, similar to what I said before about, you know, preparing for a big event. It's sort of like I don't need a lot of meditation to get me sane. Like I can just do a little touch in and I'm fine. Like I feel like my meditation bank account is really nice and full from all the practices I've done in the past. so that
perhaps,
it takes a little bit to get me where I want to go with it now.
And probably perhaps the way you see the world and how you live in the world and how you interact moment to moment is cleaner.
Yeah, for sure.
Mm-hmm. And so when you say
it puts me into a heart space.
Right. Okay. Because when you're saying your casual meditation practice, what was that prior? I'm just curious.
Well,
before you
casual,
went for the big
7 days. Like you only have time for 5 minutes when you wake up and 5 minutes before bed. You know, it's just more, you know, quick and dirty. whereas like when I was on the retreat, it was like 45 minutes on, 45 minutes off, 45 minutes on. It was just all day long meditating.
Wow.
So that was pretty intense. Yeah. So that filled my bank account up pretty nicely. I highly recommend doing a meditation retreat.
Okay.
It's intense while you're doing it, but it makes a difference later on in your life. It fills your account, and it gives you tools.
That is the most lovely description I've heard of it. It fills your account. That's so good.
Ah, yes. Yeah. Totally.
7 days, man. I would love to do it. Ah.
I know. Let's go.
Have you done one recently since at all?
No, I haven't. I'm super craving it, boy.
Yeah, for sure.
Especially if we could get out on bike rides in between, that would really do well, but they probably wouldn't allow it.
No. But it's funny you say bikes, because I actually find for myself, a lot of times when I am on my bike, I actually find that as a meditative time for me.
Yeah, for sure.
Just how I'm interacting and like how I'm interacting with my environment around me and like the sensation of my body. And I just find it very... like mindful, like I don't have like an iPhone and on, I don't have earbuds in, I'm just there. And it is bliss. It is super sweet.
For sure.
Cool.
I love it.
All right.
Aww.
Well, thank you so much for your generous time and
for sharing. Oh my God.
That was so great. So just as a recap, we've been hearing the musings and thoughts of the mighty Amy Ippoliti. And she'll be coming to the Yoga Lounge here in Canmore in September. And we're getting close to filling up. I think we're about 2/3 full, and there will definitely be an upswing towards the tail end. And so if you check out the website, www.theyogalounge.ca, you'll see various workshops offered by Amy on September, I believe, 10th, 11th, 12th, and the 13th. So that's Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday. You can come to one, you can come to two, you can come to them all. Totally up to you, but it will be an amazing time. And
the other thing about it, that what mm-hmm. we designed this year is to have only one workshop per day.
That's
so
right.
So that the rest of the day is free to enjoy the gorgeousness that is Canmore and Alberta.
Exactly.
So it's going to be almost like a retreat.
Yeah, it'll
really
be lovely. Yeah, and for those of you guys out there who've never been to Canmore before, if you need some help finding a place to stay or you need some like questions, by all means, email us at info@theyogalounge.ca, and we can, we will write you back and give you some tips. Amy, are there some website links that people can find more about what you're about and so that they can check it out?
Absolutely.
Sure.
www.amyippoliti.com. So
how do you spell that?
It's IPPOLITI, so AMYIPPOLITI.com.
Mm-hmm.
And then 90 Monkeys is 90monkeys.com.
Is that 90 or 90 spelled?
90, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. And then also, of course, yogaglow.com, yogaglow.com is where you can find my classes online. You can take
mm-hmm.
a class with me, see if you like me.
Most people do. It's pretty good. Awesome.
Yeah, and then join us on one of the most beautiful places on the earth. Oh my God. You're so lucky, Jeff, where you live.
Thank you. Well, we're super lucky to have you come out, and we're looking forward to it. It'll be super great. Thank you so much. I'm just going to pause the recording here, and see you guys soon.
Thanks so much for having me, Jeff.
You betcha.
Can't wait to see you.
Yeah. Okay. One moment.